Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. You just trust. Believe.
Welcome to Odd Trails. We have a single story we're going to share with you this week. I'm going to start things off with Act 1, and after the break, Brandon will finish off with Act 2. This is titled The Second Room in the Basement by Highest Bounty. This happened when I was 17. I had left school that summer and had 6 weeks before starting college. It was baking hot in the small rural town where I lived. Situated pretty much in the middle of England is an old coal mining town, and a bit of British history here. All the mines were pretty much closed down, which dissipated both the economy and job opportunities of the small pit towns throughout the country. Back in my town, if you're old enough, or at least if you look old enough, you spend your time in the local pubs. If you're not, that means you have nothing else to do but roam the streets seeking your own entertainment. My friends and I were in the latter. On the main road through town, away from other houses, stood a dilapidated house known as the O'Brien House. It was a 4-story, 6-bedroom mansion. An old couple had lived there, but they had passed away some years prior. They had 2 daughters who had moved abroad, and they never claimed the house, so it just sat for years building up dust and rotting away. My friends and I saw this as the perfect opportunity to have somewhere cool, private, and exciting for the 6 of us to hang out. The house had a big garden in the back, which was just as ridiculously neglected. It was wildly overgrown. It took us the good part of a day to stomp down a pathway through the nettles and brush. Once we were through the garden, there was a garage that we could drop down into once we pulled up the roof panels to gain access. We spent nearly all summer in that house, hanging out, graffitiing the walls, drinking, smoking, etc. But there was one room in the house that eluded us. For this to make sense, I'll explain the layout a bit. From the garage, you headed through a kitchen, which only consisted of a broken window that had been boarded up and a damaged set of cabinets on the back wall. From there, you stepped into a hallway that had the front door to the right and the bathroom and 2 large rooms on the left-hand side. Also, to the right, were the stairs leading up to the second floor. The staircase was built against a wall that had wooden planks running vertically. Directly opposite the kitchen door, built into the back of the staircase, was a large metal door that had been painted white, but the paint had become a dusty, sickly yellow color, and it was flaking. This door was locked. It simply wouldn't budge, no matter how hard we tried to open it, and looking at the hinges, we could tell that this door opened inwards. The house was so big that we just kind of forgot about the locked door. We spent most days up in the 2 rooms on the 3rd floor. We thought being up here was a good idea since we were far away from the road outside, and this helped us to avoid any passerby from hearing us and calling the cops. One day, as we were hanging out upstairs, one of the lads decided, for no apparent reason, to light the moth-ridden curtain on fire with the Zippo lighter that he was messing around with. The curtain, dust-covered carpet, and old wrinkled wallpaper went up in flames within seconds. We only made it out by smashing the top window and jumping onto a mound of dirt that was at the side of the garage. I think if adrenaline hadn't been coursing through us, it would have been a hell of a painful fall. We hid in some bushes down the road as we watched the fire engine arrive on the scene to extinguish the flames. But before they had arrived, the fire had engulfed the second and third floors. The second was usable once we got the courage to re-enter the house, but the third floor was completely gone. All that remained on the third floor were the outer walls and what was left of the roof. So after that, we were confined to the bottom floor. The garage was too dark to hang out in, and all that was in there was an old work table that was ordinarily used to apply paste on wallpaper, but this was what we used to get in and out of the roof. The kitchen wasn't much brighter, and the front room had a big window that overlooked the footpath and the road outside, so that was the only room left for us to hang out in, which got boring very quickly. Boredom led to curiosity, so I quickly noticed that one of the wooden planks on the side of the stairs was loose, and there was an open space behind it, so we could finally see what was behind that metal door. What a mistake that was. They say curiosity killed the cat, but in this instance, curiosity questioned my whole belief system. The wooden panels were surprisingly hard to pull off, even for six fairly athletic teenagers, so we went out and brought back a few flashlights and a crowbar. It was still tough to get through with this additional equipment, but we eventually managed to remove 2.5 of the panels. After we shined our light into the hole, it revealed another staircase that led downwards, yet it looked as if it were decades older than the rest of the house. Cobwebs engulfed every surface, and the stench of musk and mold attacked our nostrils when we got anywhere near the hole. After some giddy banter and some pushing and shoving, followed by a 6-man game of rock, paper, scissors, I grabbed a flashlight and slowly stuck my head through the hole. The room was darker than dark. It was so dark that the beam from the flashlight could be seen cutting through the blackness. I pointed it down the staircase first, and it went down very deep. 4 or 5 steps were visible from the hole that we had made, and there were at least 25 more steps below those. At the bottom, I saw that there was a wall and a doorway leading to the left. I swung the flashlight to the right towards the metal door, which was still intact and still completely locked. I was not expecting to see what I saw. The metal door was locked tight with 3 separate deadbolts that ran down the side. But what caught me by surprise was the small lip of the top step. There, pushed firmly against the door, was an outdated fridge. It was one of those fridges that were squared and only about waist high. I told the guys who were standing behind me about it, and they laughed, thinking that I was joking. One by one, they stuck their head into the hole and checked out the bottom of the stairs and then the fridge. Each one was as confused as myself. I remember sitting down, smoking a cigarette, and debating how and why it would be there. The door clearly opened inward, which meant that the door must have been locked from the inside, then somehow the fridge was put up against it from the inside. We spent the rest of the day checking the garage and surrounding area of the house for a trap door or another entrance to the cellar, but we couldn't find anything, so we just went home. The next few visits to the house were spent with us trying to decide who would enter the cellar first. Nobody wanted to. No matter how many games of rock, paper, scissors that we played, it was always best out of the next highest number. One day, I'd had enough. The others were sitting in a circle in the other room, messing with stuff and just chatting. But me, I sat and I stared through the hole into the dark void inside that wall. Finally, I got up. I exclaimed my intentions, took the flashlight from my pocket, and climbed inside. Everyone else quickly and very excitedly followed behind. The first few wooden steps immediately disintegrated under my feet. They turned into a mulch of damp splinters and clung to the soles of my shoes when I lifted my feet. It was worrying, but the stairs seemed sturdy enough to continue. With each step I took downwards, the temperature dropped rapidly and the air seemed to get thicker and thicker. The inches of dust that kept kicking up didn't help either. Admittedly, I was a little scared, but I had five other lads behind me, so it was impossible to turn back. I headed down and reached the second to last step. I could see the doorway which led to an open room, so I paused so that I could regain my courage with a few deep, shaky breaths before stepping in. The room was in a worse state than the stairs. Webs littered the rafters and floorboards above like moss. They hung from the ceiling in clumps, all tarnished with dust. Weirdly, thinking about it now, we never saw any spiders. The floor was carpeted in a layer of debris from the rotting wood above, dust and dirt. After seeing the deterioration from below, I realized it was a miracle that none of us had fallen through the floor above. This place was a mess. The cellar was huge, expanding underneath the bathroom and both rooms on the first floor. It was completely dark. There was no other light source other than the flashlights that the three of us had carried. The room stood empty, except for a wooden table smack dab in the middle. There weren't any chairs or anything else around, but on the table stood a metal plate that was crudely bashed into shape with the remnants of a black goo on it. Next to the plate stood a tall, uncorked green bottle. One of the guys went over to it and picked it up. It sloshed with a liquid of deep brown and layers of dirt inside. I never smelled it, but according to the others, it was putrid. At first, we didn't see the other doorway. It was in the corner directly opposite the one that we had entered. There were no doors, just total darkness. When we found the other doorway, we tried to shine our flashlights through the darkness, but the light didn't seem to cut through. It's like there was a door there or something. For some reason, I didn't muster the courage to go into that room, neither did anybody else. We simply turned and left, feeling like we had had enough adventure for the day. Over the next week or so, we invited girls and other friends to the house, but everybody refused to enter the basement. We found this hilarious, so we would dare one another, more to show off than anything. We dared each other to go down there, either on our own or in pairs, often without a flashlight, to see how long that we could stay down there. Not once did I get scared while standing in the complete darkness down there. In fact, it was kind of calming. But none of us ever got the courage to try and enter the other room. In hindsight, we should have been more concerned about why the door from the inside of this house was metal or why it was locked from the inside. We also should have questioned how the fridge got up the stairs from the cellar only to be placed in front of the metal door as a barrier from the inside. But full of excitement and immaturity, it never crossed our minds. After we started inviting people over, word of the O'Brien basement quickly went around. We fed all the rumors of it being haunted. Teenagers would ask us how to get into the house and for us to show them the barricaded metal door/basement. So, because we thought we were cool, we spent another day making a maze in the garden, squashing pathways down that led away from the garage. We would invite people into the house, lead them through the maze in the garden, into the garage, and show them the hole in the stairs. It got quite popular, so we decided to cash in on the opportunity. We told people that if they wanted to see the basement, then they would have to pass the initiation. As people came in, we would have one person sitting on the fridge at the top of the stairs and another at the bottom of the stairs, both with flashlights. Then we would send people to the first room, telling them that they had to stay there for 10 minutes, with the flashlights turned off, and then we would let them out. This went on for a while, and it was fun at first. A lot of people buckled under the pressure as soon as the flashlights were turned off, but some stayed. We cheered for anyone who completed the initiation as they came back up the stairs. It was a cheesy little ritual that we created, but everyone refused to go into the other room. Whenever anyone was questioned as to why, they just said that they didn't feel comfortable. Until my little brother and his friend came.
Bacteria can easily grow on your bedsheets. Pretty gross, right? Nobody likes clogged pores or breakouts. Check out Miracle Made for self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding. They use silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA and prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. No more gross odors, and your skin will be happier. Plus, Miracle Made sheets require up to 3 times less laundry than traditional sheets. I get hot when I sleep, but these sheets are also thermoregulating, so they keep me at the perfect temperature all night long. They're extremely comfortable, affordable, and better than anything I've slept on at a fancy hotel. Go to trymiracle.com/trails to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code TRAILS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/trails and use the code TRAILS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/trails to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Initially, we refused to let anyone who wasn't our age into the house, but my brother and his friends were 2 years younger. After constant pestering from them, and the initial curiosity of others dwindling, we decided to invite them along. When my brother and his friends came, we made a big deal about it. We took them to the dilapidated fence at the back of the garden, and then tied their sweaters around their faces, as we led them through the maze of shrubbery and thorns. Then we got to the garage. There was a pretty decent drop from the hole in the roof down into the garage. My brother managed to land it, but his friend had to be lowered down by his arms. Once inside, they were met with the stench of smoke that lingered from the fire that happened on the floors above. We walked them through the kitchen and showed them the makeshift entrance to the basement. We told them the story of the metal door and how it didn't make sense, and gave them the option of staying in the first room, in pitch black, for 10 minutes, or going in the second room, also in pitch black, for 5 minutes. "Second room," they said in unison. We all laughed, expecting them to change their minds immediately. Then one of the guys slipped through the hole in the wooden boards and turned right, heading up the stairs and positioning himself on the fridge. I went through next and positioned myself at the foot of the stairs. I'd just like to say, at this point, all of us regulars felt complete comfort going down to the bottom of the stairs, since we'd all taken turns bringing people down there. We had all done it numerous times, so this time was no different. There was a giddy, nervous atmosphere when the two youngsters entered the staircase. The flashlights we used were cheap ones we'd gotten from the market, so they casted an eerie, yellow glow. Slowly, my brother and his friend made it down the stairs, clearly attempting to save face by acting unmoved by the state of the rotten, decaying wood around them. But as they trenched through the mulch, they stuck close together. They took their time, so much so that the guy at the top shouted for them to hurry, and they both nearly shit their pants. When they finally got to me at the bottom, I showed them the first room as I shined the flashlight around through the doorway. Then I told them that they were to go into the next one, and I aimed my beam through the darkness of the frame to the other room. As I shined the flashlight through each room, I remember taking notice that the beam would cut through the first room, but it never seemed to illuminate the second room at all, as if there was an object obstructing its path. My brother's friend walked into the room, and as my brother walked past me, I grabbed his shoulder and told him that he didn't have to do this, but if he decided to, that he could back out whenever. With a nod and a dismissive wave, he followed his friend into the second room. They crossed the room, passed the table, and disappeared through the second doorway, as if walking through a dark stage curtain. I hit the button on my watch to start the timer for 5 minutes. I then aimed the beam of my flashlight up the staircase. The guy sitting on the fridge smiled excitedly and looked at his watch. "I need to piss, dude. I'll be right back," he said, jumping down and disappearing back through the gap. As I stood at the bottom of those steps for what seemed like forever, I could hear the faint giggles from across the room. They seemed muffled, as if I was hearing voices from behind a door. "How long do we have left?" my brother's voice shouted. 3.5 minutes, I replied, after confirming on my watch. Now, in the basement, despite it obviously being underground, it was never an uncomfortable temperature. It was colder than upstairs, but had no bite. There was never any chill. And while being down there countless times, not once had any of us felt any sort of breeze. And this memory still haunts me a little. I noticed that I had become very cold as I stood at the bottom of the stairs, to the point where I could see my breath when checking the time on my watch. Then I noticed the mumbles from the other room had stopped. I tried to focus and see if I could hear any movement or the nervous noises and giggling they had been making before. But I heard nothing. I remember getting freaked out at that moment. I didn't know what I was feeling so freaked out about, but I felt my heart beating faster. The hairs on my arms and the back of my neck stood on end. I turned on the flashlight and stepped into the room. "Yo, you guys all right?" I called out. Nothing. No reply. "Now stop screwing around, time's up," I called out again, but still no reply. I shined the flashlight through the doorway of the second room, but just like before, it was as if the beam cut through the room but then stopped at the doorway. I crept closer, calling my brother's name, but he never replied. Then, as clear as day, so loud it hurt my ears after the silence, a voice, deep and brash, bellowed, "Leave. Now." I froze on the spot, with my eyes fixated on the doorway. Then, emerging from the gloom, ran my brother and his friend. Both were white as snow. They had tears and snot streaming down their faces. The look of pure terror on their faces is something I have never been able to get rid of. They bolted straight past me, which snapped me out of my trance and I followed suit. Before we could reach the doorway to the stairs, the sound of crashing came from the stairwell. Four ridiculously loud bangs and the sound of snapping wood, which was the sound of the refrigerator tumbling down the stairs. After falling, the fridge was embedded into the wall at the bottom of the staircase. Without skipping a beat, we all scrambled over it. The staircase itself was a complete mess, with large splinters of wood stuck up like spikes. I don't know how we managed to clamber back up on our hands and feet without injury. Halfway up, I looked towards the hole in the wall, praying it would be in reaching distance. Both of the younger guys were in front of me, sobbing and screaming. They ran straight past the hole in the wall. The metal door, that once appeared to be closed and locked, stood open. Light from the kitchen spilled down into the basement, as if we were being shown the quickest way out. Instinct had set in by this point, so all three of us darted through the door and the garage. My brother's friend, who was too small to get out on his own, managed to do so without any help. Once we were out, we ran through the garden maze. At one point, I had to grab hold of my brother to stop him from going down one of the many dead ends we created. And without a word, I took the lead. We raced to the fence, squeezed through the hole, and collapsed on the field behind the property. I looked around, and there, also sitting on the grass, staring at the three of us, was everyone else who had been in the house. No one said a word. Everyone looked just as scared as me, except for the two younger guys. They wept, for a long time actually, as we all just sat there in silence. Once they stopped crying, we all got up and went home. My brother said nothing to me on the way, or when we got back. He simply went into his room. I went into mine, and that was the end of that. No one went into the house again. It stood for a year or two longer before being demolished. One of the daughters had finally come to claim the land, only to sell it to some building firm. Now a group of houses sit where the garden and mansion once were. They are nice-looking houses, to be fair. My brother still refuses to walk past that estate. Nothing was ever built on the land directly above the cellar. For some reason, the builders refused to fill in the cellar. They just bricked it up and left it as open space, despite being able to fit a perfectly good house right there. Since then, we've only brought this up once within our friend group. They said that night they heard the voice and the loud bangs, which made them notice the metal door was suddenly open. After this happened, they bolted. I tried asking my brother about the room, but he completely shut down when I did. He also quickly stopped being friends with the kid who went down with him. All he would say about that was that they no longer had anything relevant to talk about. Whatever was in there clearly wanted us out of the basement and away from the house. But the voice had no feeling of kindness to it. It was pure hatred and malice. Whatever it was just wanted us gone. Something else that plays on my mind a lot, especially when I was writing this, was how if we were a few seconds faster, that fridge would have taken all three of us out while climbing the stairs. Whatever moved it and opened the door had no regard for our safety. I haven't spoken to my brother's friend since. The last I heard, he'd moved away, and my brother has had no contact with him at all. I did ask my brother about him recently. He said the kid changed, became weird the final 2 years of school, just kept to himself and dropped out of every friend group. I suppose I feel a little guilty about that. My brother was never willing to talk about what happened in that room. He always shut down when I asked. He wouldn't even try. He would just get really angry very quickly and say he never saw anything. We obviously both heard something, and the door was opened by something. There are pictures of the mansion after the fire. You can see the smashed window from the fire brigade and black from the smoke around the top windows. There are also photos of the cleared land and the new buildings, with the vacant patch of grass where the bricked-up basement still remains.
Your dog is a member of the family. Serve them the top quality food that they deserve. Serve them Nom Nom. Nom Nom delivers fresh-made dog food personalized to your dog's preferences and unique caloric needs. Dogs love great-tasting meals, just like us, yet their nutritional needs are different than ours. That's why Nom Nom's nutrient-packed recipes are developed by board-certified veterinary nutritionists, freshly made and shipped for free to your door. It's made with 100% premium ingredients, which means 0% freaky fillers and funky stuff. Nom Nom has already delivered over 40 million meals. That's because the best dogs, like yours, deserve the best food, Nom Nom. Whether it's Chewy.com, PetSmart stores, or delivered straight to your door, Nom Nom provides your dog's favorite recipes whenever, wherever, and however you want them. So say goodbye to boring dog food and give your dog a reason to run to their bowl with every meal every day. I love my dogs. They are my children, which is why I'm committed to only giving them the best. Nom Face Assured or your money back guaranteed. By the way, Nom Face is Nom Speak for dogs deliriously excited about dinner. Nom Nom is available at Chewy.com and your local PetSmart stores, or for 50% off your no-risk trial box, go to trynom.com/trails, spelled trynom.com/trails for 50% off your first subscription order. Now back to the show. That was a really fun story, a bit different than our usual stuff, but I liked the long-form delivery and the way that it was written. Just really atmospheric, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was great for the same reasons. An old coal mining town in England that faced some hard times. It sounds so gloomy and inviting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something like something you might see in one of the Fallout games, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's perfect. Or Silent Hill.
Yeah. I still need to play through those. I actually liked the Silent Hill movie a lot, which is also a setting that I thought about during the story.
Yeah, yeah. That does suck for the people that live there, though, just like all the remote coal mining towns here in America that aren't doing so well anymore, or any industry for that matter that took a dive.
Yeah, we have a lot of places like that. They look like ghost towns, except for people are still living there and trying their best to make a living, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely a huge bummer for the families.
For sure. So, I remember you saying you usually picture the same sort of house in your head for most of the stories that we share on here. Was that the same case for this one?
Yeah, it's kind of like how most living rooms on sitcoms have a similar look, no matter what show that it is.
Yeah.
They always have like the two staircases, one in the kitchen, one in the living room.
Yeah, the couch right there, and
yeah.
The audience faces the back of the TV.
The TV that doesn't exist, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of like that when I read a story that takes place in somebody's house. I actually have a couple of houses. One is basically the layout of a childhood friend's home, and that's used for Let's Not Meet stories for some reason. The other is something that I just kind of made up where the staircase is always on the right against the wall. And then there's the living room on the left, and you go through the living room and there's a kitchen in the back. I don't know why. I just always use that setting for supernatural or haunted house stories.
I've always used the staircase on the left because I imagine like the sitcoms. Well, actually, no, because All in the Family, when you walk in, the staircase is on the right, but in Full House, it's on the left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all kind of similar, just a little mirrored.
Yeah. Golden Girls is weird. They like always come through the kitchen on the left.
Yeah.
It goes right into the kitchen and then the living room's on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. The O'Brien house made me think of House on Haunted Hill too.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one. And even though this all took place in England, when the author described it as dilapidated and building up dust, my mind visualized the whole thing taking place inside Edward Scissorhands' mansion.
Oh, yeah, nice. Also, an unexpected Vincent Price double feature, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Good call, good call.
Yeah.
I never really appreciated how perfect he was for Edward Scissorhands until I saw more of his movies when I got older.
Yeah, he's one of the best, or was one of the best.
Definitely. Rip.
Yeah.
Rip. That sounds so insensitive.
Definitely. Rip.
My bad, V. My bad. Rest in peace. You did great. We love you.
Yeah. There's just something about abandoned, neglected places. It doesn't matter where it is or what it is. I always just immediately wonder what sort of hauntings or spirits could be there, you know?
Of course, yeah. Even though those things can happen anywhere, I think that sort of setting just automatically sets a certain mood.
Mm-hmm.
I also see it as like if something has a lot of history behind it, that's just more time and opportunity for something paranormal to attach itself to it.
Yeah, the story makes me want to climb on more roofs together. Just that whole forbidden exploring thing.
Yeah.
I miss doing things like that.
I know, those were some good times. Now I think we're both just kind of like, the cops could get called. I'd rather not have to talk my way out of a petty misdemeanor, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I also feel like if we got that wild hair again, I would just end up pulling a muscle trying to hop over a fence. And you'd get, I don't know, too far ahead of yourself and just fall through a staircase or something.
Why is that so accurate?
Because it is.
Very fair, very fair. Well, I guess we should touch on the story itself a bit, all this talk about houses that we love. The whole thing was like one big Pandora's box. It all just kind of unraveled into something bigger, but we still don't really know what was actually going on there.
When they first mentioned the cellar with the deadbolts locking the door from the inside, it creeped me out more than it probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was still locked, it just doesn't make any sense how somebody could have locked it and left, or even if they could, why? It's just too impractical to make any sense.
Yeah, and the fridge being placed against it was obviously really intentional. I wish we could know for sure. Like, whoever did that must have been the same kid in school who would lock the bathroom stalls and crawl out from underneath.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've done that, right?
Yeah, I was that kid.
That doesn't seem like you.
Yeah, I had a phase when I was little.
No, I get it. I get it. I was a bathroom misfit too. Not proud of it, but in the fourth grade, my best friend and I used to flush random things down the toilets at school. For some reason, it was just so amusing to watch stringed cheese and crayons spin down the toilet bowl.
Yeah, I know. Me and my cousin were bad. We used to do stuff like that all the time.
Nice.
The custodians must have hated us when we were kids.
Yeah, that part didn't really cross our minds at the time.
Yeah.
It was literally just toilet humor to us.
Yeah, literally.
Literally. But then the principal brought it up at an assembly that we had, and we felt bad, so we just stopped. We had a good run, though. I do apologize for any inconvenience I may have caused, though.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Anyways, what were we talking? Oh, yeah. The who locked the door.
Yeah.
That's assuming it was a regular person who did it.
Yeah.
I think the voice who told them to leave basically ran the whole show inside the mansion. Maybe it was some sort of trapped spirit or even a guardian. I know the author said he thought it was evil and that the falling fridge could have hurt them, but I still think it's possible. Maybe I'm just optimistic and like to think there's a less malevolent explanation at play here.
I was actually thinking of a guardian too at first. You know, the locks and the fridge might have served as a barrier to keep people out or away from whatever force was in the cellar.
Yeah.
The basement suddenly turning extremely cold being a more direct warning. And when they wouldn't listen, the guardian basically just got fed up and straight up told them to leave and chuck the fridge down the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I'd probably respond too. If it did have ill intentions, there was plenty of opportunity to cause some harm, right?
Right.
So I kind of see the guardian, I guess that's what we'll go with,
yeah,
as sort of a spiritual cousin to Beast from Beauty and the Beast. Think about it. They both get pissed off when unexpected visitors show up to their mansion. You already left, so I know you got that immediately. I love that.
Yeah, that probably checks out in some way. I get it. Maybe if the author and his friends stuck around a bit longer, the guardian would have fallen in love with them.
Oh, pretty much. Just a supernatural polyamorous spinoff of the original story.
Yeah, very romantic.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think I kind of err on the side of it being an evil voice. His brother was so traumatized and it seemed to really screw those kids up.
That's a good point. Yeah, I figure anything paranormal could do that, but The fact the voice was so evil, that was probably unnecessary if it was something less than evil. So who knows?
Yeah. Who's to say?
So to speak, give or take.
Yeah. Well, now I feel like I need to watch Beauty and the Beast. I always felt kind of embarrassed as a kid for liking that one so much because at that time, it was considered more of a girls' movie in the 90s.
That's right. Yeah, it's so weird because so many, pretty much all Disney movies have that whole princess element to it. But you're right. For whatever reason, everybody at school is like, oh, that's a girls' movie. Yeah, whatever. Like, it really matters.
I know. Yeah.
Even as a kid, I thought the whole boy thing, girl thing, what we should and shouldn't like was just so stupid. So stupid.
Yeah.
I don't miss feeling that way for liking what I liked back in the day.
Same. It was kind of like that for music, and it's different now too. I always wanted to tell people about how much I love to listen to bands like the Pixies, Pavement, or like Built to Spill growing up. And yeah, I loved them. I loved indie bands, but I also loved stuff like Linkin Park, System of a Down, or like Korn, you know? Bands that the cool kids at the shows used to make fun of you for liking.
Yeah, it's finally become less of a stigma to like those like corny, no pun intended, like new metal bands. Like I remember it was considered not cool to like Linkin Park for a good while. Like there was like a big divide, but now I feel like everybody loves Linkin Park, which is great. It just took a while to catch on.
Yeah. I always just felt like I had to pretend that I didn't like them. I guess it also has to do with getting older and caring less about what people think.
That's exactly right. I can honestly say I don't care at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe within the past couple of years, but there's no reason to care about what anybody thinks about. There's something called, like, I think it's the three F's, unless they're financing, feeding, or effing you. It doesn't really matter what they think.
I like that.
Yeah.
I was so worried about that stuff in my teens and my 20s. But listen, if you're a younger fan of the show, take it from a couple of old geezers. It's okay to be yourself and just like what you want. You don't have to conform and be like everyone else, and you don't have to agree with everyone on everything, and you don't have to do anything to be cool or be accepted.
See, that's the PSA that we needed more of in the 90s. I don't know what happened, but yeah, totally there with you. Authenticity goes a long way. So yeah. I think, especially these days, everybody tries so hard to be all different and unique and all that, where everybody ends up kind of being the same. Or
yeah.
It's so weird. It's like some like 3D chess. No, 4D chess, that's the term.
Yeah.
That everybody's trying to play to be more ironic and more or less self-aware while still being
real.
It's just so exhausting. Like, I do not like the whole social things. I don't do good with it at all.
Yeah, I wish I could have figured out that I didn't like that stuff earlier on. I just thought something was wrong with me. Anyway, Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. We appreciate all of you. If you have a story to share, make sure you send it in to stories@oddtrails.com so you can hear it on the show. And if you want to support the show and get ad-free episodes, go to patreon.com/oddtrails to sign up and support the show today. And make sure you check out the new episodes of my other podcasts, like Let's Not Meet, a True Horror Podcast, and the Old Time Radio Cast at Cryptic County Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see y'all next week. Everybody stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.